This episode of Frontier War Stories is part of a 10-part special series made with the support of Courier Mail, the voice of Indigenous Australia. Courier Mail is 100% Aboriginal owned and 100% self-funded. Visit couriermail.com for more information. Frontier War Stories is edited by Awesome Black. Welcome to Frontier War Stories. Before I go any further, I'd like to pay respects to the country on which this podcast is being made. I also like to pay my respects to all the listeners who are listening from different parts of this beautiful continent and from around the world. I also like to pay my respects to all Aboriginal people across this continent that fought in the frontier wars, which began as early as 1788 and lasted to the 1930s. That's roughly 140 years that Aboriginal people continued to fight and resist. I also like to pay my respects to all our mob across this beautiful continent today. Each episode, I speak with different Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people about research, books, and oral histories which document the first 140 years of conflict and resistance. These times are the frontier wars, and these are our war stories. Yama, Bo Spearum, Kumori Kuma, Marawari, and host of Frontier War Stories. This episode I'll be yarning with Peter Jones, one of the organisers of the Appin Massacre Memorial. This is an annual event that happens every year on the 14th of April. And one of the reasons why it's coming out now is because I've just done this amazing partnership with the Courier Mail. It's great to make this connection and be a part of their amazing platform as well. This is one of the first sanctioned massacres to happen within the Sydney colony at the time. It's about maybe 15, not even 20 years after the arrival of the first fleet. This is a point where they're getting further into the territory of the local Sydney tribes, further west as well. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode with Peter. I certainly enjoyed catching up with him as well. Pete, for joining us on Frontier War Stories, just recently in Sydney on the 14th. Sunday the 14th of April, they met for the memorial of the Appin Massacre. Pete's going to give us a bit of info, a whole host of information about that and the importance of why they've, decided to commemorate and continue to mourn what has happened at this place. But then also, being within this sort of, space, frontier wars and sort of truth-telling space as well. I would love to know more about that, about Pete and his journey in this sort of field. I guess just first and foremost, thanks for jumping on, Pete. Could you tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure, thank you. Thanks for inviting me on and giving me an opportunity to speak. So personally, I'm a community member. I live in Campbelltown, New South Wales, on Dharawal land. I've lived here most of my adult life. I'm a community worker, I guess. I'm a consultant, work with out-of-home care. But during my time working in out-of-home care, I became a lot more conscious and aware of, the appalling record that we have as a society in the number of Aboriginal children who are taken from their families for a whole lot of different reasons and end up in care. So I sort of came at it from, firstly through my work. I was working in government, but I became a lot more aware of just this terrible history of injustice, and then looked into a bit of the history, got involved with Reconciliation New South Wales. My personal story is that I was born I guess, in Bingra, New South Wales, and my first home was on the banks of the Mile Creek. And so part of our history as a family, my sister and I have a number of brothers and sisters, but my immediately elder sister and I that was our first home. And we found out later in life and learned about the story of Mile Creek. So I guess that initially gave us a personal connection. And then so we actually visited the Mile Creek Memorial and were very overcome and overwhelmed and impressed, all of those things, by both the community of people who were interested in this and were committed to memorialising that really important, occurrence. So when I came home, I know nothing about my own neighbourhood. I know nothing about the lands that I've grown up on. I didn't even, at that stage, I wasn't even aware, I guess, of Dharawal as, a term for the land that I lived on, and I knew none of the people. So I went on a bit of a journey to try and find out more, and I got connected with the Wingamayamli Reconciliation Group and the amazing Sister Kerry McDermott through that search, because I had a few skills in writing letters and, a bit of clerical experience. She let me get involved. Well, that's not true. I became involved, but and through that group, I finally met the community members of the descendants and who'd been affected by this. So it was a real connection to me within my community to actually get involved in the memorial.
Surprised, yeah, I didn't realise, you have a connection to sort of Mile Creek through, growing up down that way as well, which I would love to sort of, chat more about as well as we sort of delve more deeper into this episode as well. But you've been doing the memorials for the Appin Massacre, and how long have you been involved?
So the memorial itself started, and I don't know, I believe the community members for many years informally have been aware and met and gathered, small groups of people for many, 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 many years. In terms of our group and the sort of formality side of it, it's really, I think the spark was really the bridge walk in 2000. I think there was a bit of a growth in, that recognition, and so people really stepped up. So from about 2000, the event itself and meeting at the current location, which is Appin, Cataract Dam at Appin, which is not far from the site of the massacre, was that's when it really sort of became a formal event, and it's grown and grown. That was a handful of people, I don't know, half a dozen, a dozen, whatever, whoever turned up, and then slowly more and more of the community. It was always an inclusive event. It was always a place, so it's just drawn that group. So, for example, on Sunday we had, between 350, 400 people out there, and that's the minimum sort of numbers that we ever have. It's a bit of a quiet year, but we had a good turnout. Our peak was in the 200th, which was 2016, which, was 200th memorial year of the anniversary, and we had upwards of 2,000 people came out on that event. So about, 24 years, obviously.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
Almost around the same time as with Mile Creek.
I think so.
Up in Mile Creek, the memorial isn't actually, on the site of where the tragedy happened. Is it the same when you do the Appin Massacre as well? Obviously, I think there's a walk involved as well, is that?
Yeah, we don't. Our walk's not quite as long as I've done the Mile Creek walk. It's a little bit longer than what we do. But yes, it is. We meet in the picnic ground at anyone who's been out to the Appin, the Cataract Dam there at Appin, and there's a beautiful walk down through the bush. And it's really a car park area, but we have that You know, we'd have it decorated out and with a big circle and, you know, seating for elders and people. And we hold the ceremony there because that's the biggest sort of open space. It's just a practical thing. Yeah, it is a distance from the actual site of the event. I'm not a community member to the point where I'm aware of, I've never been to the actual site of the massacre. I don't feel it's my place to go there. We consider that, you know, the community considers that a sacred place. As with Mile Creek, there's always a risk of idiots and people when they become aware of those places, you know, so it's a bit of a protection of those things to not hold the event there. In recent times, just in 2022, a lot of work was done with Heritage New South Wales. I don't know the name of the government department, but so they've accepted that the site of the massacre is more than just that whatever campsite where people were murdered. It was much broader. It was a whole military campaign. So there's been an acceptance of, you know, the whole of this particular environment, and it's been identified. So I think it was one of the first places that they've said, here's a landscape that involved this massacre. So it includes things like the site of the killings, the site where bodies were displayed, you know, as part of the terrorist sort of in terror campaign, and some of the other access and things. So there's a whole site has been identified, and parts of that are now protected from development because it's in an area of southwest Sydney where there's very much rapid development. We're on the growing edge of Sydney, the southwest side of Sydney on the way to Wollongong, and so it's a vulnerable landscape. Fortunately, there's a lot of natural land there that's part of the catchment for the dam, so it'll always be protected, or who knows. But, you know, there were plans for a road to go through, etc. So a lot of that has now been, we understand, protected by this recognition of the landscape. You know, and a little bit different to, I guess, where in Bingra or Dulungra up that the Mile Creek site, where there's a known area that, you know, of this, I guess, where the bodies were found and as a ridge, and you don't go there, but it's sort of visible, whereas the actual site is not visible from where we meet.
No, that's cool. Thanks for. You know, for that as well, of this event, it was, you know, a sanction by, you know, somebody, you know, very high, you know, before it was Australia as well. So there is some significance, you know, around, you know, not just this, but all massacres are very significant events, but in particular this one as well. So could you, just delve a bit of into that?
For yeah, us? Sure. And look, and I'll be... Look, my first disclaimer is I'm not a historian. There's a lot of people who speak to the history of it, and I just recommend people look. You know, and as a simple Google search of the Appin massacre will bring up some really fantastic sites, and certainly the New South Wales or the Australian Museum in New South Wales has got some really really accessible information. So I'll just say that up front. But in terms of general knowledge and understanding of this massacre, it followed a period of time on the Sydney Plains, the Cumberland Plains, where the pressure of white occupation coming into contact with, you know, the local people, the Australians who had always lived there, and really we started to get that. I think it's around the time of that shift from the sort of tentative friendliness between people and curiosity about who the heck are you and whatever, and it started to move to, hang on a second, you know you can't just come walking in here and take our stuff. So there was a bit of pushback, and you know, with the white colonial indignation, however, how dare anyone stand up against us, you know, then resulted in, you know, more and more violent responses, and you know, this that I think that grew until the colon, you know, the people in the colony got scared enough that they said, oh, you know, governor, you got to do something about this. And so it was a formal decree. And, you know, really it was the first, it was, again, you can look up the actual words of that decree to go out and, you know, suppress these people and show them what for. And it was a formally sanctioned, you know, battalion or regiment that set forth to, you know, on a campaign. It was a campaign. It was a military campaign to go and, you know, take lives and, you know, quell the resistance. Yeah. So that's, you know, 1816. There's a whole mapping of the campaign that came like from Sydney right down. Where about? Campbelltown's about 50 kilometres southwest of Sydney. It wasn't a big hike in those terms of those days because, you know, they were on horseback, etc. Appin itself is probably about 70 kilometres. So less than 100 kilometres southwest of Sydney, this event took place. So there was impact all the way along, you know, or, you know, those troops travelling through are going to have met and encountered Aboriginal people and who knows what they did that wasn't recorded.
Yeah. Getting on to what you were saying in regards to, you know, it being, you know, a military campaign sanctioned and one of the first, you know, so, you know, and just to remind people as well, so, you know, 1788, you know, the first fleet, first 12 ships rock up, set up shop, they're here for quite some time, you know, and the goal, you know, is to expand, is to find more places to get resources. Obviously, you know, the tension is running high, I guess, around, you know, around this time. So there is a lot of, you know, a lot of kickback from the local mob, you know, a lot of resistance as it would be. This is coming from the first governor here as well.
One of the early governors, I don't know if he was the very first, but, yeah, it was Macquarie. So Macquarie was one of the first governors, and he, you know, he was big on the expansion. A lot of the area, you know, some, like, even Campbelltown's got a connection to, the naming of Campbelltown's got a connection to Macquarie.
Close to, well, you know, 1830s, they get up to, you know, they're up around Mile Creek,
yeah.
You know, yeah. Yeah, so it's a very fast expansion.
Yes, yeah.
That we're talking about, a very brutal expansion, yeah. That is taking place in wherever sort of they set up. Yeah, it was very brutal,
yeah.
And it was very quick as well.
Yeah, and I guess, and, you know, that connection that we have, I mean, we have wonderful connections through our colleagues with Mile Creek, but also that idea that, you know, Macquarie's actions, here's me, not the historian, but Macquarie's actions actually, by being, you know, very overt and very, you know, and official, is basically giving the message, it's okay. You know, and to you others who want to go out and do similar things, it was giving a sort of a tacit approval to vigilantes to say, oh, well, we're doing the right thing because the government, you know, and that, I mean, and then those who went and conducted further massacres would at least had some moral authority from the government to be doing that. I mean, there's a lot of discussion about that, but that's sort of my feeling that, you know, you do as I do. So they didn't then have to go on and do it. Then the government didn't have to keep doing that as an official act because they'd set in train the wheels of approval for other people to act so abhorrently.
Sort of settlers and squatters and, you know, partially sort of getting involved in these, you know, Mile Creek is an account. Waterloo Creek is an account.
Yep.
And I remember yarning with Map out of Newcastle, and they were chatting about, like, usually if, you know, these sites are in close proximity to each other, over, you know, massacre sites I'm talking about, usually whether they're, you know, weeks, days, months, or years apart, it's usually the same perpetrators. And, you know, they were trained, you know, military style as well. And we would sort of get on to my next question with this. You brought up the fact that, so after the Appin massacre, this sort of was given the green light and go ahead for sort of, you know, civilians to sort of carry out this in a way. And you know, today we hear from conservatives, whether they're conservative historians or just conservatives in general, that these things never took place. You know, the massacres never happened. And even, you know, some of our most recent sort of history never took place, like the Stolen Generation or, and other things. You know, they always say the line that, you know, this country was settled peacefully, where we have, you know, a governor, you know, sending a letter to his troops and saying, look, you know, go out and conduct this. And also I think they said, you know, bring them back as prisoners of war. I think so.
Yeah.
You know, like, those things, you know, I find very interesting because we always have this denial of history when, you know, it's so blatantly in front of us, especially nowadays with, you know, the more books and, you know, podcasts and sort of TV shows that are sort of coming out now to describe this history. But yet we still have, you know, a huge, or hopefully it's not a huge portion of our population that still denies this history. For yourself, who's been involved, as you mentioned earlier, sort of reckoned with sort of growing up on the banks of the Mile Creek as well. How does that make you feel knowing that, you know, we still have, you know, many generations younger and older than yourself sort of part of history?
Look, it's a really good point. And I think, you know, my history as a white middle-aged man in Campbelltown is that this history was invisible to us. So, you know, like, a lot of us white middle-aged men get quite confronted to think that, well, you know, why, you know, how do people, you know, feel so badly towards us? And, you know, so that's we have that egotistical offence that we take about, but we're nice people, you know, don't put that on us. And I think, you know, the bottom line is it's about recognising. You know, I think truth telling is the right language, because we were brought up at a time when history was, yes, that's fact. And because depending on who tells history, that is their fact. So yeah, like it's really important. I think just the very fact that we've not grown up with, you know, an understanding and awareness of all the amazing knowledge that, you know, true Australians had around living in this incredible continent and in incredible, you know, for so long, and they're from everything to conservation to how people can live together and share resources, how we can live together, you know, just the fact that the culture itself has been suppressed and we haven't had access to it as a general community, and that every little bit of it has to be fought for. It's wonderful now to, you know, be driving around and come to towns and actually see, you know, you're on Biripi land, you're on Ngunnawal land, whatever. There's actually some presence about that now that gives us, oh, okay, that opens up whole stories. Well, who are these people? It opens up questions and it opens up, I think, that curiosity and then awareness and then respect for that, I think. And when you grow up and you're 50 and you still haven't met an Aboriginal person, you know, in the 70s, Campbelltown was one of the fastest growing areas in Australia, and I believe we had one of the largest Aboriginal populations in the 70s, 80s Yeah, and Campbelltown, this MacArthur region, was a melting pot for Aboriginal people from all over Australia and all over New South Wales. And, you know, when at Appin at the weekend, there were many of the community are, you know, from, they're not, there's not that many Dharawal here for obvious reasons of past government policy, you know, but there are a lot of other Aboriginal people here, and we stand shoulder to shoulder with them, and they performed and they respected and they contribute in that way to bring culture to our community, you know, in a way that it's been denied in other areas. So it's not just about recognising Dharawal here, but it's saying this event was symbolic of a process that, you know, has done what it's done to Australian society and shaped it the way it has. This is the time to reverse it and bring it back and bring people together. And so, that, you know, I don't know what your original question was.
Wow, that's good. It sort of gets to a point of sort of, you know, the significance of the an event. And, you know, I think, you know, if you ask, you know, 10 people the same question, you're going to get, you know, all sort of different answers because of one of their lived experience, their experience close to the proximity of these sort of sites, as well as how they're involved in them as well. So, and, you know, sorry, you're going to say something?
Oh, I was going to say one of the things you asked about, you know, the impact on someone like myself of not growing, mm-hmm. you know, not being aware of that culture and stuff. And you know, look, I had a coffee with a friend in the last couple of weeks, and I, you know, I mentioned that I'd been out to Appin because that's one of the things we were talking about, what we do. And, you know, he said he's still struggling with that. I don't ever say to anyone, you're bad for not coming to Appin, but he hadn't come out. He said he's still really struggling with the idea for himself about that one of his ancestors, you know, was one of the first settlers on the Hawkesbury in round Wiseman's Ferry. And, you know, he a lot of his thinking is, oh my God, what might this person have done? What, you know, that in our blood is all these actions to, you know, so we had an honest conversation about that. I think it's a natural way for people to feel, and everybody comes to the journey they're in their own way. I mean, I don't think guilt's useful. I think recognition and acknowledgement and curiosity are important, and awareness. I think those things are all really important.
It's with your friend, the sort of, I guess, the more coming to terms your friend will with that history, you know. Well, like we're seeing, you know, and we have seen for quite some time, historians sort of, you know, write about this history sort of as like a blanket sort of period of time or selective periods of time and events. And then we're also seeing, you know, the descendants, you know, of some of the perpetrators and also some of the victims come out and start to write that history. Like I've got Dave Marr's book just behind me here, and, you know, just recently I think in somebody from Victoria just came out and, you know, denounced sort of, you know, their family's history.
And I saw that, yeah. And Appin now, like the last, maybe in the last 5 years, we've actually had a number of people who have come, you know, who've come because through that journey and finding out about their own history. And so they've, you know, they get acknowledged as well. And I know that's much a much bigger feature of Mile Creek because that's been part of the structure of that memorial. But I think but I think what happened at Appin, because there wasn't so much awareness, but now as people are becoming more aware, people are stepping up, and we want to let them know that they're really an important part of the story because their acknowledgement of their history is part of that. So we really encourage anyone to come and feel that that's a safe space. That's not a place of guilt. That's a place of acknowledgement. And, we've had a couple of people that have come at different times and stay in touch with our committee and members, some of the elders. They've made friends, they've become, friendships have started and through that process. And that's, I think that's also really important. We, you know, we're very strong on this being about friendship, not, you know, with each other. Like some of my closest friends now in Campbelltown are people, you know, who have been involved in the memorial because we spend time together each year, not just doing this but other things. And I think that that's, you know, as much a part of it. We're trying to create a different type of culture.
And you know, we see that, you know, every year, I guess, you know, with what you guys are doing down there with the Appamasca, with Mile Creek up. So I'm based here in Brisbane, but in Toowoomba, every year they do the memorial of the Battle of One Tree Hill, where this is on the other hand, where it was blackfellas that defeated sort of, you know, like the whites up that way. And, you know, it's amazing, you know, to see, you know, like you get the local military regiment always come and lay a reef down. A lot of the schools get involved with reefs and sort of reading, you know, parts of the history. And, you know, Uncle Kev Carmody and his son made a song with like the local school and stuff as well. You know, the local TOs in the area sort of get involved as well. And it's amazing. Like, you know, I work with some youth, and I remember one year I took a busload of young fellas up the middle, you know, blown away, and got to yarn with the elders and, you know, got to know a bit about that history as well, which is amazing to see, the, you know, the more of these. And you know, every year on the 5th or 6th of January, up here in Brisbane, you know, we pay respect to Dundalee, you know, the warrior that was one of the last publicly executed people here in Brisbane. And it's amazing to see, you know, like, you know, we could fill our calendar up for the, you know, for most of the year, sort of looking at these significant dates and, you know, people start to, you know, contribute and to memorialise and commemorate, you know, whether it was, you know, such a bad event or, you know, a period of time as well. It's definitely amazing to see and be a part of this journey for me personally with the podcast as well, because I get to chat to, you know, people organizing these events or writing some of these books and making, you know, the films about it as well. So it's definitely
to see. And that's important to recognize. A couple of years ago I drove to Perth. I took a little bit of a time out for my 60th birthday and drove to Perth, and I know that on the way I came across three memorials, one in South Australia, one in and two in Western Australia, I guess, that, you know, that were recognising these types of events across Australia, and I found that really fascinating. They weren't widely published. I just sort of, in fact, sort of stumbled upon them, but I think there's a lot more people are now sort of wanting to know. So it's yes, we could fill the calendar because every day something was going on. And a shame, it's a terrible thing, but it'd be a good thing also if people actually went, wow, the extent of this was massive. It was widespread and it didn't finish historically that long ago. And who knows what other massacres and, you know, things have happened. So, yes, it's really, really important.
It's definitely so important to, you know, for the average sort of person to whether get involved or attend, but, you know, just sort of check out the sort of local, and because it is local history when it comes, you know, it's in our backyards. It's sort of, you know, it's the parks that we walk through. It's the sort of, you know, holiday destinations that we go to as well, like Rottnest Island. It's, you know, at the back of, you know, a farm that, you know, where a farmer's been there for generations and they have, you know, multiple kids, you know, living on a, you know, these events took place everywhere and anywhere where I guess that they could quarrel sort of the resistance from the mob and, you know, pacify sort of the rest of sort of the community in those areas as well, and they did it in such a very brutal way. Just this back end of our yarn as well, for yourself and the group as well, is this the only event that you're organising, and where can people sort of go to sort of keep up to date with next year's event or anything that you do have on? Because I know you've got a Facebook page.
There is a Facebook page and a couple of look, social media is not our big suit at the moment, but I think we're getting a little bit bigger at it. People can always contact me directly. My number's connected to we do have a website, which is wingamiamily.com. You might be able to spell that out for people. Best by email to that website, because I monitor that website.
Now, thank you, Pete, for coming on and having this yarn and the amazing work you do to sort of end with the local mob and elders and the working group as well to push this forward, as something that needs to happen as well. So I definitely thank you for being involved.
I really appreciate your time. We finally got there.
And thank you for tuning in and listening to the latest episode of Frontier War Stories with my guest Pete from the Appin Massacre Memorial Committee. Just remember, you can listen to the podcast on all your favorite streaming platforms, as well as the Courier Mail, which is this new partnership that I am doing with them, and also, as always, Awesome Black. It's always been a pleasure. Yalu.
AwesomeBlack.org.
Comedy, culture, fun.
First Nations owned.
Supported by you.